everybody, eh? Thank you very much, guys. Can you hold that second? The multicolored people have white children. They walk around the town looking browned off, so many of them tanned to the max. But this is not the climate for that. I wrote this in December. It was winter, and they cannot have gotten so pigmented by worshipping Ra in our excuse for summer. I think they want to be the opposite of Michael Jackson, and as if those who are striving for swarthy shades are not bad enough, others are walking around not so much tanned as tangoed. Well, sure, it still literally has tan in the title, I suppose. Why would anyone want to look like that? They're like tall Oompa Loompas, and the Orange Order will no doubt be receiving a lot more applications via the nationalist community from young Catholics who now have a desire to be orange women. What is wrong? None of this has anything to do with colour, I might add. From my perspective, people are what they are. I really don't care. But there has to be something seriously suspect about a person's sense of self when they become so displeased with the very skin they've been born in. And I mean that both as an analogy and in the more immediate physical sense. The multicoloured people have white children. I wonder what those white children will be generations from now. Maybe they're being noble and preparing for the multicoloured, multicultural future we will be having. A future which I support. You see, I'm not a racist. But I'm not fucking orange man either. I'm just ice age white. And you know what? It's all right. Cork is a beautiful city. I don't like the people much, but it's a nice city. A lot of this I'd have to read from the page is... I'm not making excuses, I just write so much that I can't memorise it all. It's humanly. Words. I wrote this today. Today, just after 15:35, I was passing just outside when I heard, Echo! Echo! It was coming from the front of the post office. Echo! Echo! I was laughing to myself because I knew that eventually the inevitable would happen. Echo! Echo! Your man who was selling the Echo had a well-smacked looking head. Or maybe it was the nature of his obviously soul-destroying job which had led him to losing his Echo! Echo! Again and again. Echo! Echo! As I sat waiting for another human being to recognize the clear existence of no Echo! Occasionally a sigh of boredom would get in on the end of his chant and he'd have to Echo! But he always recovered with an Echo! Echo! He was not very inventive. The only change he had aside from the speed variant was the very casual adding of the word evening, like so. Echo! Evening! Echo! I am unsure of exactly how much time had passed and exactly how many echoes I hadn't heard when a young lad of around 5 or 6 was passing with his mother holding his hand and the sequence was complete. It went, Echo! 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 Kids can be amazing. They're aware of things the world has made us all forget. And another one from Cork. This morning at breakfast. So, it doesn't have a title yet, and it's not quite finished, but I'll let you guys be the judges of it. I have been looking for evidence of similarities between people despite perceived differences in vast geographical tracts. And this morning, at breakfast in a B&B in Cork, I found just such evidence. At the height of the Troubles in the North, if you went into an area where people didn't know you, you would be asked a series of defining questions to ascertain which foot you kicked with, so they could figure out which foot they were going to kick you with. Such as, what school did you go to? What's your second name, or your ma's second name? What estate did you live in? Of course, what they really want to know is, are you a Fenian or a Hun? But dumbasses don't do straight talking. So I'm eating breakfast, and this spindly-looking wee fucker with mousy brown hair and a Christmas Day smile sits at the table opposite, and he looks at me and says, how are ya? I'm good. I'm okay. It's a lovely morning, isn't it? Tis no, he says. A couple of minutes pass as he's crunching cornflakes, and he says, and where will you be from, so? Belfast, I say, looking through him, because I'm already formulating how this poem is going to begin. I do shit like that. The standoff continues, and just after he laps the top of his hard-boiled egg, he says, do you get much butter up that window these days? No, I say, it's grand. No more armoured cars or tanks and guns. But he didn't get my musical, historical, sarcastic quip. I must admit, my answers thus far had given little away, but his questioning was hardly special branch quality. Another few minutes passed with deep gulps of coffee and nervous eyes. Then he says, and will you be watching the Gaelic this weekend now? I will indeed, I tell him. I wouldn't miss it. Of course, now he has me figured out. So I say to him, where are you from yourself? And he says, Jesus, at the time. Right, so I'll be off then. And he's away out the door before I can say, you sneaky wee bastard. Serious, funny, I'm going to take yous up and down and all over the place. Yous might not like some of it. I really don't care. I'm really sorry. This poem's called Prophecy. Note, Cassandra, in Greek mythology, she was given the gift of foresight by Zeus, but there was a clause in it where when she told people the future, they didn't believe her. They thought she was mad. So it's called the Cassandra Complex, and she's mentioned in it. This poem is not funny.
I'm leaving.
It's called Prophecy. Sometimes I won't fully know what it means, but I forge it anyway. Then weeks in the future, I'll be given the meaning in something gentle that happens in a day. Cassandra is subtle, and not nearly as mythological as they have written her to be. She is not some prophet. She is merely a series of deep realizations which lead to contented conclusions. The supernatural is not so. Our collective lack of confidence is fooling us into believing that what is normal is outlandish and beyond our eyes. We are beings of immense power and potential. All we need do is look for ourselves to know. This poem's called Normal Alcoholics. The alcoholics think I'm normal, and the normal think I'm an alcoholic. But the normal act like alcoholics, and the alcoholics are not normal. Four cans of Tennent's. We used to play in the abandoned housing estate that was just across the black path from the less abandoned estate where our families existed. Two of us lifted a small, light manhole cover and found four stashed cans of Tennent's lager. We'd have been about seven, so we were very unsure about what we should do. My friend wanted to drink from one due to curiosity rather than thirst. As we both paused to consider our childish dilemma, an older man was passing with his wife and their shopping. He hadn't been the one who'd hidden the cans, yet he'd seen an opportunity and wanted them. He could have just taken them from us, I suppose, but he didn't have that type of face. He offered us money. I don't remember how much. So he took the cans, and we laughed all the way to the shop. Clap! Go! There he is. Thank you. I got away with it. I told a room full of people to clap, and they did.
Well done.
This poem was written yesterday in Dublin. It's called Follow Me. In Bus Aris, I asked the young woman in the coffee kiosk where there was a cash machine, and before she could answer, this man with a vague Scottish accent ordered me to follow him, stating, "I'm going that way, I'll show you." As I followed him, I thought, he could be taking me anywhere. It's as well I'm prepared for this sort of thing. On the way, he said, "The weather doesn't know what to do." "That's Ireland for you," I answered. "The people don't know what to do either." "That's true," he said. "I came here for 3 months, 19 years ago." "Well, you know the drill then," I told him. I said thanks, and then I went to the cash machine, and it was pretty uneventful as I withdrew 50 euro. I know. It's new stuff. I'm trying new stuff back in here. This poem's called Eavesdropping. I sat at the very front of the bus from Dublin to Cork. The driver was African. He looked like Nate Dogg, and I liked him. I didn't speak to him or have a reason to like him, other than him resembling a dead rapper. Strange, that may be. But that's how I roll, motherfucker! Some of the time. He answered his phone and was speaking hands-free for over an hour. But he didn't say much. Just a series of yes and uh-huhs and the odd quiet sentence which I couldn't discern. Maybe he's doing a sideline as a phone-in counsellor. Talk about multitasking. I joked to myself, and then I said, "But seriously, this guy's a damn good listener." was a slow one there. Thanks for it. This poem's called Road Rage. Have you had enough of V6 horsepower revving in rush hour? Tired of HGVs making your blood feel like antifreeze? Is that baldy, beardy bastard in the blue Subaru getting to you? Then you should try Road Rage. It's free and easy to use. Just shout and scream behind the wheel of an automobile. Don't let that flesh fuck and fry test Rasta be the only one to have all the testosterone injected fun. Grab that, they may have the ability to knock the fuck out of you, but you can give them the fingers, call us mad her, and stick your foot to the floor, and challenge the fucker to see who's going to get first place in a roundabout race. This channel does not condone or encourage speeding or any other roadside practices deemed illegal by the PSNI. Please see your local peelers or littleboyracer.com for details. On the Lisburn Road in Belfast, there is the hippest, most happening funeral directors. And rather than dealing with the abstract reality that is death, they instead treat their patrons to an everlasting afterlife driven by the soulful, melodic, groove-strewn graveyard shuffle. James Brown funeral directors, putting the get-up, get-on-up into an otherwise dull and depressingly dismal deviation from life, helping your relatives stay on the scene like someone dead machines. Thank you. This forklift driver I was working with told me that he'd heard something on the wireless. And I said, "Where is this wireless?" And he said, "The one up at the other door." And I said, "That's not a wireless." And he said, "Yeah, but we used to call them that years ago." And I said, "Yeah, but radios have wires, so they're not wireless." And he said, "Fuck off, Fox, you bastard." And then walked away in a huff. That's a true story. The cans are falling out of the bin. That means there are too many of them in there. The contents of each can ended up in my head, then ultimately the earth. It's only a small bin, but I drank all those cans. That means I'm drinking too much. I'll do something about it. I'll empty the bin. Thank you. Angry young men do the wrong thing. They don't like dancing and don't want to sing. Can't be contented with their access hate. So it gets released when they're in a state. Talk to them sober, or sound as a pound. Become more uptight with every single round. It doesn't take much, just a glance or a nudge. Then someone's on the deck before you could say a thud. Over at your back room when the Ashburn closes. Won't be going home until they break some noses. Angry young men knock about in groups. They don't like immigrants or pears or fruits. Angry young men beating up our shadows to copious amounts. They will fuck in marrow. The big tap comes a lurking on Saturday night. All of the natives come out for a fight. Some in their 30s, most much younger. Starved of oppression, it's blood day hunger. You just can't beat an old-fashioned scrap with the thud of the kicks and the nice happy slaps. The scuffle of boots on a tarmac ground. The taunts and jeers of boys gathered around. It's all real life in these small town streets. Keep your head down or else you might get beat. Even at that, you might still get battered. It ain't your fault, it never really mattered. Angry young men beating up our shadows to copious amounts. They go bark fast, matter. Roll up, it's local amateur boxing. This fella here's gonna knock someone's fucking sincerely kick off. He's been on the go. Any moment now, he'll be ready to blow. Test off their own alcohol and excess baggage. This combination make him hard to manage. He has a few issues that gotta be resolved. Beat someone stupid and it's problem solved. Back to bed steaming, blood on his shirt. He's hardest. Never even got hurt. He feels much better for now anyway. He's doing it all again in 21 days. Angry young man beating up our shadows to copious amounts. Then go buck fast, man. Yeah. The Irish girl at the train station. In 1990, in a train station, in England, I waited every morning to go to work. At the time, I always wore an Irish football jersey. You know, Italia 90, Big Jack, Peggy Bonner, Ray Houghton sticking the ball in the back of the net. Half of us are fucking Irish up in the north, you know. Anyway, one morning, this girl, who I had seen on many occasions, came over and asked me if I was Irish. I gave her a really odd look and walked away. She wasn't very attractive and had glasses on. I was 17 and shit like that mattered back then. That moment keeps coming back to me. I can still see her looking disappointed. She was probably self-conscious about it. Every few months, she pops into my head, and I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I had spoke to her at least, and I wish I didn't have to carry around such seemingly meaningless regrets for 20 fucking years. The Trees, for Lee Wharton. The trees appeared different. I couldn't comprehend how I was discerning their movement. Slight leaves tender against the sky as I made new thoughts from memories, from earlier, from you. The people stood still in your garden, drinking tea and looking for things to say to each other. No one wanted to be insensitive, so they spoke with ultra caution. After they brought you in, I went and looked. I put my hand on your chest and said, "What's the crack, mucker?" I felt like breaking into Easy's verse from Gangsta Gangsta. Here's a little gangster, short in size, t-shirt Levi's is his only disguise. Built like a tank, yet hard to hit. Ice Cube and Easy E called run in. But I didn't. I was mindful of the people and their unrequited mannerisms. When I was done, I walked outside and looked up at the trees again. They hadn't changed like they had earlier. It was then I fully realized, you're not dead. Nothing dies here. It's continuous.
All right.
It just is. We worry if it's too much or not enough. Is it too late or too soon? Did I say enough? Do enough? Could I have done any more? We always project back, but at the time, we don't say, what am I doing now? Could I be making a mistake today? It's always afterwards that makes us mindful of ourselves, and therein lies our difficulty. When you project back, you are spending the present looking at the past. Why can we not look at the present while it's occurring? There is no too late or too soon. There is no too much or not enough. Everything just is. It just is. Thank you to the lovely Debbie McGee. Video game advertisement. The latest in video gaming on the Nintendo DHSS console introduces Gyro Day, the superb new life simulation game. Could you live on £109 a fortnight? Remember, you can live rent-free eating beans on toast. And if you enjoy a drink, remember Sainsbury's do 2 litres of strong dry cider at the bargain price of £1.20. This game is as exciting as it is filthily cheap, and drama ensues around every less than working class corner. The gang of buckfast drinking news outside your flat are keeping you awake all night. Do you try and reason with them and risk a serious hiding, phone the peelers, or just go out there with a baseball bat? Just one of the many dilemmas faced daily in this fabulous new game from the makers of that other classic, which Down and Out Gaming Magazine gave 5 stars. Fuck's sake, only 15, and we're not up at all. It's all true! Guys, I say these things, and people look at me and they'll be like, oh, you shouldn't have said that, or it's a bit dodgy there. I'll tell you something now, I'm just telling the truth. That's all. You can't handle it, fuck off. This poem's called Breathe. Throw your grief at the sky and curse in the face of fate. Blow candles over the edge and puff your chest up good. Buckle your mouth for strength and glow like a dying planet. Do not fear the 7 billion. They are but facsimiles of you. Listen to coarse hip-hop and talk like a dead ghetto god. Quote Bukowski and Plath and know that language is life. Scream the names of your loves and build an army from the dead. And then, only then, will you be ready to take your next breath. Inequality. If you think people are different, you're promoting inequality. If there is inequality, someone will look at you and label you. And it'll fucking harden you too. If one person is a scumbag, then we're all scumbags. And conversely, kings and queens. If you think anyone is better than that fucker out there, that's not part of the poem. If you think anyone is better than anyone else, you're promoting, you're promoting inequality. No one is unique. No one is different. No one is less than. No one is better. Everyone is human. I have to do something coarse now because I've got an arm. This poem's called A Smile. When you hurt a person, you're not only hurting them, you're hurting all the people they come into contact with. After you've hurt them, they may look for a smile, but the space where it should be is taken by the pain you passed on to them earlier. The people they cannot offer a smile to walk away with nothing except a fraction of your pain, and they pass that on to all the people they meet. Later, after much disappointment, you will meet someone, and you may well be in need of a smile, but there won't be any smiles there. You shouldn't wait for someone else to smile. You should go first. because every smile you put out there comes back to you later. Missing. He had on one shoe and a flip-flop, which was probably 3 or 4 sizes too small. I had seen him previously sleeping against an afternoon wall, wetting himself, slurring at tourists, always there on that street, drunk. His shirt would have been white once, but it had yellowed and was splattered with blood. He held a can of Bud and a rolled cigarette, and he muttered to himself, giving loud cheers to the sky as passers-by looked at him in disgust. He wandered the streets that way most days and nights, enduring his slow chemical madness, which is easier for others to ignore or risk repeating it. Over the next 3 days, I noted his absence and wondered where he'd gone. Maybe he'd got cleaned up or got certified. Maybe he'd moved out of town. Who knows? I looked at the people on that street where he had been drinking and drunk for weeks, and they didn't notice he wasn't there. Only I could see that he was gone. And I stood there, looking into it all, thinking to myself, what sort of a world makes it that someone can disgust you one day and not even enter your thoughts the next?
Thank you. I like those slow claps.
I like that. I like everything. I love this city. I love all your faces. I love humanity. I think we're amazing creatures, and I think we should do more for each other. And this is not nonsense. I really mean this shit. I really do. We need to do things for each other. We need to help each other, you know. We really do.
Even if you don't like the bagpipes?
The bagpipes are okay. His mother probably loves him. What am I doing? 20. I was standing on the platform during one of those nowhere moments. I couldn't do anything until the train came. So I just stood there, stepped this way, then that. Look at my phone every 10 seconds. Check the timetable again. This old man walks up and starts pointing down onto the tracks. That's a disgrace, he tells me. It's been there for months now. What's that? I ask. A £20 note, he says. It's just sitting there getting all dirty from the oil. If I was younger, I'd jump down there and get it. I check every time I'm at this station if it's still there, and it always is. If it wasn't against the law, I tell him, I would jump down there and get it for you. Sure, if you jumped all the way down there, he says, you'd be as well keeping it for yourself. You'd need to give it a good wash, though. The train came shortly thereafter, and we both got on in different carriages, and I have never seen him since. But the £20 note is always there. I check every time I'm at that station. It feels like I'm carrying on a proud tradition. They are masters of colonial ceremony, invading and inducing genocide for and with monopoly, cruelly inflicting death on many. Unholy civilized cross-bearing crusaders made a pact thousands of years back, and still their kin are kingpins, top of the economical, political, spiritual, medicinal chain. They make decisions to kill, like we make cups of tea. They are non-accidental, academically charismatic, abstract spooks in Armani suits dressed for godliness. They own the banks and invent the news. They go to great lengths to dictate their views to the blind, who listen from ourselves in this open-air financial prison called Earth. The city swell with many millions of mentally barcoded clones who don't know about the tracking devices in their mobile phones and don't realise the extent to which they're all being bent by the house and car loans. Poor subservient drones lack in the skull case pack in to say, hold on. We lie in the evenings drinking tea, watching mind infesting TV, smoking ganja man. Sure doesn't it make you calm? It does. But it also creates a subculture. Because when you're stoned or fucked or drunk or off your nut, you don't think. You don't want to think. You just want more drugs and drink. And when serious matters come, you either hide them in the back of your head or knock out a stranger's teeth and leave her in the street with you later hoping she's not dead. We watch Africa on the BBC and say, thank God that's not me. But it is me. And you. I'm very sorry. But we all got screwed a long time ago. Money does not exist. It is a myth. We spend the ideas. Those numbered pieces of metal and paper are just fictitious fractions of humanity. And without their commercial profanity, we'd have less lunacy and a lot more sanity. Thank you. After you've reached it and retraced it in backward steps and still not come up with any satisfactory answers, you begin to realize that this is either a trick or a test. After you've screamed and kicked and lost your mind more than once and all you've achieved is further excuses to scream and kick some more, you begin to realize that kicking and screaming are both useless and obligatory. After you've gathered too much knowledge, your head starts aching from deep within, your eyes bulge, and your mouth is useless at working anything out, and you begin to realize that knowledge is not power. After you've witnessed multiple horrors in glaring real time, continually having to go back and pick yourself up from the unforgiving grind, you begin to realize that you may well be immortal, and not even death is certain. Are you enjoying this?
Yes.
I'm glad you are enjoying it, because I really am, and it would have been a complete anti-climax for me, really. Everyone said, you're shit. All of it. No, are you serious? Or you're just...
Absolutely.
No, you're just being nice to me. Thank you very much. This poem's called The Single Bed. The single bed was uncomfortable physically, but from an emotional angle, I loved its closeness. We were getting to know each other's skin. I was musing about a constellation I had found in her eyes when she took my left arm and began exploring the sadness of my scars. She made a line between arteries with her finger and told me that her mother had made a fatal incision in that place. I told her I was sorry. Then we forgot about death and made love again. The night sky rode. I walk homeward in a frozen night, suffering with shivery shudders as I search in my empty pockets for a little heat I may have left there earlier. My mouth is emitting clouds of precipitating mist. My pulse is elevated somewhat as my blood works to keep my iced skin supplied with inner warmth. The robe is a mirror of hardened, glaciating, glistening ice sheets, gradually joining like flat snowflakes, unfettered by the moisture that remains in mud on steep banks and occasional pothole puddles. I look up into the night with its clear sky and the twinkles from light years away, and it's like the night is looking down onto the road and peering at its reflection, sparkling there on the tarmac black. Garden of fists. Feelings go fists. The world is a garden being watered with words. Humans are plants, straining on the humus with petals for fingers, opening for loving sun, then closing into boned prehistoric shapes when reaction takes nature's flow to the next eruption. We are hard-headed mites with horns on our knuckles and elbows for brains and knees and steel toe-capped toes and anger for love. 3.2%. The company offered a pay rise of 3.2%. So my workmates all stand around looking at each other for some words of support. They discuss how the company makes so much money and how they get so little. I tell them it's a capitalist system and there's nothing can be done about it. They just look at me as if I'm not part of the plan they made for the world, and their eyes say insanity for me. They say there are other places of employment that pay much better, so I tell them to go and get a job in one of them places. Again, they stare at me sideways. Everything is a fight, a struggle. Everybody thinks they deserve what they haven't got, and they are willing to endure a lifetime of stress in following a minuscule fraction of a percent. I leave their gathering thinking about when my insomnia may return, or how long my current spell of happiness might last. Living for something. We always fight, love, drink and dry, annoy, insist, talk and enjoy the selfish attention. We murder and write, build and die, grow, cry, affect and stir into hypothetical days. We trust and pander, hate and hold, paint, fuck, touch and help ourselves to hearts. When doing nothing, we stand around in our eyes, looking at all the other corpses, wondering where it is. It's called Mucker. Mucker is friend in the north. I stopped taking interest in him. All he wanted was to be taken across the road and allowed to chase rabbits through hedges. He was a biggish Jack Russell with markings over both eyes, as well as a strange triangle of three spots on his hind that we said was made when he was abducted by aliens. I started to just let him out on his own. You could call it neglect. And one day, a couple of young lads called and told me he was dead at the bus stop. He'd been trying to cross the road for rabbits. I hadn't kept him long enough to become attached, but I lifted him anyway and buried him over the fields. I should have listened to him. His needs were so simple. Poem's called The Meaning of It All. My friend Lee Warden, who the poem earlier was about, he died in May, and it was a pretty powerful thing. He was my best friend since childhood, and I miss him, I really do. But I've written an awful lot about him, and he's not dead as far as I'm concerned. It's called The Meaning of It All for Lee Warden. He came out of a cloud brandishing enlightenment. As soon as his eyes reopened, I could tell there had been a major change, albeit temporary. He looked so assured right then. I didn't think it was that easy, he told me. It's like the offside route, very easily misunderstood. I sip at wine. It's Saturday morning, just after 8 in the 1990s, and I can't remember whose living room we're in. He doesn't seem to care. The discovery he's made has put sparkles in his retinas, or maybe it was the cannabis that made those candescent eyes that shone like a modern renaissance. He draws long upon an expertly built cone and passes it to me. Then after a few concentric rolls of his chemically slowed head, he says, "Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be so simple. It's amazing." "What's amazing?" I ask, in a near high-pitched tone, because I'm in the middle of a gauntlet of inhaling. "The meaning of it all," he says. "The meaning of it all." "So, what is the meaning?" I ask him. "I don't know now," he tells me, disappointed. "But I knew a few seconds ago." Warden, You're fucking stoned, man, I tell him. I know. He says, imagine forgetting something so important. Has my set been shortened, or? Sorry? One? Let me do two. Three. What happened to coconut fingers and gravy rings, the currant squares and creamy dance, the BAPs? I swear it's a conspiracy. Someone's renamed our BAPs. BAPs and all subsequent connotations and associations are part of the very essence of our misspent Irishness, or misspent Britishness, depending on the cultural mix needed into your slow-baked demographics. Every boy's nickname BAP do you know? I can recall at least five in my lifetime. You'll not get away renaming our BAPs. Don't be at it, or your eyes will be swole up like BAPs. So just wise a BAP and lay off our BAPs, chap, or we'll be assembling an army of boys by the name of BAP, and you'd be getting slapped. You'd be getting crimped, blanched, boiled, dusted. You'd be getting battered. BAP, BAP, BAP. With all these super swank supermarkets nowadays, the humble BAP is near extinct. Now, I'm all for multiculturalism, but the folks coming here got to recognise how we've been bred, and the conglomerates can still make their dough. Don't be taking our BAPs, or I'm telling you, we lost a BAP. So make sure you support your local bakery. Get in there and get yourself some proper BAPs, and we'll get BAPs back on the map. Just don't go in saying, here, love, you look at your BAPs, would you?
Guys, thank you all very much for having me.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
You were slapping a mendigo, what are you on about? Call me off, so you're calling me a dirtbag and everything, mendigo?
Yeah,
I'm dazing.
Don't be saying nothing, but the world is really flat. It's really flat, but don't tell too many people that, you see. They wouldn't be able to handle it. You know what they're like. They've only just gotten over the ascent of the third, right? The world is flat. It always has been. It's really flat. Have you not walked out the door and seen the horizon? It's in the distance. It's on a nice straight line. You can't fall off the edge. You just teleport to the other side. The world is flat. And that's why Columbus was full of shit. I mean, there was no film crews to document none of this. Fair enough, he says he went west and supposedly found a new land. But it wasn't really new, you see. It belonged to a red man. The world is flat. You can see it with the mortality of your eyes. Now, don't be bullshitted by the establishment's lies. I mean, a ball spinning in space. Catch yourself, don't for God's sake. The world is flat, and that is the end of that. Next, they'll be telling us a dog's a cat. It's as plain as God, and the devil, and heaven, and hell, and the furries and the goblins will abide the wishing well. The world is flat. With a monopoly board around the outside, and the dice sometimes cause the sea to rise and subside. That's how you get earthquakes and tsunamis too. Big giant capitalists play Monopoly and they're fucking screwing you. Chess Park is situated down beside Australia. Community chests are located up in the middle of Canada. And if you sail out to the centre of the Atlantic Ocean, there's a massive big Monopoly spelt buoyed by the sea's motion. God created the boot and the dog and the iron in his own image. And on the seventh day, he created a game called Cribbage. The world is flat. Because Buddha loves board games and card games. What do you think you do in hell? There aren't really any flames. You see, what happens is you go there and you play a trivial with the devil. And if you beat that fucker, they move you up a spiritual level. The world is flat. As you and I and everybody knows. By the way, there's 200. You can have to pass and go. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.